I'm speaking to Ken Cockerell from NASA, astronaut. Welcome to Southern FM and the Space Show, Ken.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Ken, tell me about your role at NASA now. I know you've flown in space five times. You're currently an active astronaut, and your role currently is?
Well, I'm working for the boss over the astronaut office and over the aviation department that we have. I'm his assistant. That guy is called Flight Crew Operations Director, and I'm his assistant. He's also letting me be a T-38 instructor pilot for part of the time as well.
Okay, Ken. What involvement have you had in the return to flight effort?
I've had no technical involvement. I've not sat on any of the boards or panels that have been overseeing the return to flight. Of course, I've had a very strong personal interest being an astronaut and watching what's going on.
And you, what was your involvement with the STS-107 mission? Were you in an active role in that?
No, not with the flight. In fact, I was living in Russia at the time. I was the liaison between NASA's training effort for the International Space Station and the Russian component of that.
Okay, how is your Russian? I assume you speak Russian and you as part of that role?
My Russian's very poor. I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for that, but I picked up enough Russian to order food in restaurants and get on the trains and things like that. But because I always had a properly trained interpreter with me whenever I was conducting any business for NASA, so I didn't do that in Russian myself.
Okay, one of your five missions, I think the last mission you flew in 2002, you rendezvoused and docked with the International Space Station. Could you tell me about that process of docking? And also, I believe there's some changes in the rendezvous procedure for the 114 flight?
Actually, I've been to the station twice and docked on two different parts of it. The second time was just very similar to the way the docking will go for Eileen and company in a few days' time, with the exception they're going to do this thing that they've nicknamed the RPM, the something pitch maneuver. I forgot what the first letter is. Typical NASA acronym. Even NASA people don't understand them. But at about 600 feet short below the station, as normally where we just push off and fly this little quarter loop up to in front of the station and back onto it, they're going to do a flip, a very three-quarters of a degree per second, so it's not a very fast flip, and it'll enable the people on station to take a lot of digital photographs of the belly, and the leading edges, everything they can see of the shuttle from pretty close range. 600 feet looks pretty close. And then after they terminate that maneuver, then the rest of it will be the same as previous dockings. It's docking the shuttle, to me, was the best part of the flight, docking to the space station, because you do it on the third day, so you've gotten over any kind of queasiness that you feel. You're dressed comfortably in shorts and a t-shirt or however you choose to dress. It's a nice flying vehicle, and it's flown manually. Part of the task, we get it to keep the tail pointed at the Earth with the autopilot, but the rest of the flying, the driving it into the cone to make contact with the docking mechanism, is all done manually. And it's a very satisfying feeling to make this 240,000-pound orbiter respond nimbly like a little sports car, even though very slowly, onto the space station. So it's great. I wish I could do it again.
I believe the shuttle docks much slower than the Russian vehicles. Did they change the speed that they dock to the station?
It's a question of force that's needed to be put into the mechanism. It has some spring latches that requires a little bit of force, quite a bit of force, to overcome those latches and make the initial capture. Because the shuttle is a heavy vehicle, the speed doesn't have to be as much to get that same force. For the Soyuz and the Progress, since they're very lightweight vehicles compared to the shuttle, they have to hit a little harder. They're on the order of close to a meter a second of impact, and we're on the order of tenths of a meter of a second.
We have an active role in the launch or the landing of STS-114.
Very important role, standing with you or any other person from the press and answering questions. So I'll be watching here at the press site.
I assume you know Andrew Thomas, Australian-born astronaut. Have you flown with him?
No, I haven't flown with him. Worked with him some when he was on Mir, but we've never flown together.
And I believe you have experience of Australia and spent some time there.
Absolutely. Some of, I would say, my formative years were created in Australia. I came home. My father worked for Alcoa Aluminium. We call it aluminum. And they were starting a joint venture with Australian power company interests and called it Alcoa of Australia. They mined the bauxite on the west coast, and we lived in Geelong where the refinery was to take, actually the smelter was to take the refined bauxite into aluminium.
Could you tell me what it's like to fly over Australia? What does it look like in space? I believe some people have some nicknames for flying over Australia, is that right? The fast brown land, nothing, I think someone said.
Well, maybe you heard that from Andy, but Australia looks red. Much of the central desert part has a reddish color to it. Last time I flew, the time before last that I flew was with Tom Jones, and I flew with him twice, actually, and he's an excellent geographer. And he could get your eyes onto Ayers Rock, and he can get your eyes onto craters and Mount Everest, and he's very good at that. But he made flying over any continent really interesting. And, of course, I was always trying to take good pictures of Port Phillip Bay, and the fact that we could actually find Ayers Rock, it helped if it was early morning or late afternoon, made flying over Australia just super. And the Great Barrier Reef is really fabulous from orbit, too.
Tell me about the feeling, the experience of a launch of ASCENT, and also could you talk about the landing procedure? You've flown several, well, a couple of landings yourself as a commander.
Yeah, launches, as you would expect, it looks scary, and it truly is scary. I'd say the scariest part, though, is the last minute or so prior to launch, and then once the main engines start to run, well, the excitement builds, but then when the boosters light, you know you're going somewhere. It may not be to orbit that day, but you're going to go somewhere because there's a lot of power there. They start shaking you around, and it sort of snaps you into the reality of the situation, and you get down to doing your job. So the fear, the excitement, the anticipation drops off dramatically at the point of launch. And then during ascent, the first 2 minutes are kind of a rough ride, smoothing out gradually, especially after you go supersonic. But once the boosters come off, it's like being in an electrically powered vehicle. It's very smooth, quiet, very quiet, and just a comfortable place to do your job. Towards the end of the total ascent, the part on the liquid engines, the acceleration gets big because the tank is almost empty, and the thrust to weight is really good. So you got 3 G's of push on you, which is not a large amount of G, but it lasts for a solid minute at the end, and you feel like you have 3 of your friends sitting on your chest. And so it's a little more difficult to do the things that you need to do with the keyboards or whatever, but comfortable, not a real problem. And then the instant of engine cutoff is very quick. Turbo pumps just stop, and the valves are closed, and there is no more thrust. And it feels like on the first flight I could have sworn we'd crashed into something, because it felt like you stopped from accelerating at 3 G's to going no acceleration in any direction. Of course, it's a totally free feeling, but it's such a change. You feel like you've been in a car wreck and you should be crashing through the windshield. Landing should be the best part of the flight, but we make it the worst because we make ourselves dress up into the launch and entry suits again, and your spine has grown a couple of inches during the flight, 4 or 5 centimeters, and getting into the suit is a real bear because it's now too small for you, and you're forcing your body into a smaller thing that it wants to fit into. It heats you up. The suits are not, you know, real comfortable. And then you have the add on top of that the change from being in zero G for a couple of weeks to back into the gravity field, and you don't feel well. It's a nausea-inducing feeling. So you're wearing this heavy and hot suit. You don't feel so good, and you get to do this beautiful flying task the last few minutes of it anyway. it's a great flying task, but it's kind of tainted by the physiological extras that you get.
Well, thank you for your time, Ken. Much appreciated. All the best for the launch of STS-1114 and for the rest of the shuttle program, and hopefully you'll get a flight again before the program finishes.
Well, you know, even if I don't, it's going to be a great time to be involved in the space program, because this flight will get us back on the road to finishing the space station, and the space station will put the laboratories and the time in orbit in place to get us completely ready to go back to the moon and on to Mars, and I hope to have a hand in those flights, whether as a crew member or as someone that helps develop them. And so it's a super exciting time to be here.
Well, thank you, Ken. Thanks for talking to The Space Show on Sunday FM.